Hey guys, Sean Salisbury here, and welcome to Unpaved with myself. Adam Sager will be along shortly. Poor dude had to go to the dentist today. Maybe he'll come in talking out of one side of his mouth because he's still got numb on the other. My guy, Triple E, you guys, and Laura behind the scenes. And I just want to tell you, we really appreciate you, Triple E, as always. We're really building a couple things on my mind in my crawl today, man. Not in a crawl in a good way. I guess maybe that's not the way to put it. There's a few things that are heavy on my chest in a good way. One is the excitement and the journey of this show that started 3 years ago, and I was getting a master's degree. And I just want to thank you guys. I do. We're spending so much time in our industry looking for reasons to get hot takes and clicks and views, which I know they're important. But I do believe, as I told a person in a feature interview last week, that had called me about this show and some other stuff I was doing, was excited about it. I said, you know, we spend so much time, all the stuff, hot takes and pay and you get this and you do this and views and clicks and influencers. It's fine. It's great. I said, but there still is a space for hardcore passion, great sports, great politics, great food, great entertainment, right? Listening to our callers and our viewers, but also it's a great space. I think we're going back in time a little bit for a lot of things. And I think that at times some of the things that we see on TV and radio here can be insufferable because they're yelling at you or the rest. But we all get passionate. I'm not talking about once in a while. I'm talking about the constant grind. And I think you guys, you may not agree with everything we had to say, but that's the great part of this business. I've never understood broadcasters who are offended by a fan disagreeing with them. As long as it's respectful, I've never been able to soak that part of that of it in. I just haven't. It's good banter. You learn something. And I was asked a question by the same guy last week about athletes and fans and going on and, you know, how watered down the business can be. And I think athletes probably should put more respect on fans and you know, broadcasters I'm talking about that have people that give them a take on the radio when you invite them in or on a show or a tweet or a tech, whatever it is. That if they're just talking the sport, maybe they know something more than the guy who's supposed to be an expert at it. Doesn't mean to know more about the whole topic, but maybe they know something more. For almost 30 years now, it's the year 30 been doing this, and I've learned as much from fans and listeners, honest to God, or people who have tweeted at me, as I have from the guy sitting next to me, right? Because a lot of times the guy sitting next to you is like-minded or played the same sport or is in the broadcast business. I like outliers, man. I like an unpaved journey. I do. I like the unpaved road and hearing it from different sources. I just have never understood it. So we're headed towards something really special on this show, not only with the backing and support of advertisers, but content and optics. And I'd like to think good, hardcore. And listen, we're not full of ourselves on the show. We are not journalists. I got a journalism degree, but unless I'm breaking news, it's something going on and, you know, with ICE or Antifa or world stuff or some, you know, or breaking a trade, which that's not mine. That's reserved for the chef and the rest of it. That's not my point of emphasis. I like to get their information and go because that's what they specialize in. I specialize in all of it. If somebody calls me up and says, Sean, this guy's getting traded, it's from a reliable source, I'd tell you. But I want stories and the study and to bring something to you, any part of life that maybe you can learn from, but have a blast. It's kind of a get away from the shit we got to go through every day. And trust me, we all wade through it. And it's about moments. And I like to think we give you some moments on here, but really excited about the studio. I've been talking about it for months, but it takes a while to get it done right because I want it done right the first time. And the people that are on this, and we will be adding to this in a really special way as we head towards January. And I'm really excited not only about the partners, but about the talent on this show and the guests. We've gone about it in small steps for obvious reasons because, you know what, we're learning along the way, change things along the way, and a lot of it's because of you guys. So thank you. That's one. Two is I just want to tell you my love for what I do is not based on cash or any of that. We all want to get paid for what we do. But I truly love coming on here. And after all these years, there's certain sparks along the way, whether it's a fan or fans or somebody who says something to you or your own passion or you discover something new along the way or find a new good partner on, you know, that's a good talent on the air with you that re-sparks your, you guys are in your working your ass off every day. In your business, same way. A new boss comes in, boom, all of a sudden it sparks a new interest. A new coworker comes in and, man, challenges you and bam, you're good to go. A new friend along the way says, man, you know what, come to this business with us and I think we can, and there's just, we all need to be revitalized, man. And this business is great for me because there's something new in sports and entertainment and in politics every day. And it can be really good and it can be heart gut wrenching to talk about, but it also, I think, brings out passion. So I love doing it. And so I just want to lay out, we get so caught up in, oh man, this guy, and we're going to get into that shortly about why is this guy doing this and how screwed up is the NFL for doing this and why the hell is the NBA doing this and this player is good and this player sucks and all that. So we don't take time to just stop and thank you guys, because true, you guys are in my soul, man. You just are. My local Houston listeners that I love beyond belief and nationally is why I'm back to doing national stuff. You get opportunities along the way. You want to pick and choose and kind of, you get to a certain point of your career, you kind of want to carve out. It's like you want to carve out where you retire, where your retirement home is, or retirement home, where your retirement home, meaning that you build or what you go live, right? Your retirement place. And it's the same with this. You get to a point in your career, you kind of want to carve out and direct it yourself a little bit with help from your friends and team, kind of build something. I like to build stuff, right? And so just to see it develop. And I'm a big unpaved journey guy, as I've told you, hence the name of the show. We all go through it. We spend most of our life on an unpaved road, man. We do. And so when we get to the paved road, it's cool, but we usually shank a ball or shank life and get back in it and have to work our way out of the weeds, man. And that's a good thing. I love it. And organized chaos, maybe, which is a good thing, but at least for me. For everybody, it's not. But I just want you to know the passion, and this show's revitalized that on the national level, because you do get burned out. You get burned out in your job. I get burned out in mine. People get burned out, construction, everything. And it's all important, more important than what I'm doing. If you're building houses, saving lives, working on knees, fixing somebody's eyes, teaching school, military, all that's far more important than what I do on here. I just hope that we're a respite for you from that. And so I'm grateful to have you along, and you're never going to always agree. If you always agreed, I'd shut the show down. Because if I didn't get your opinion, what's good is that? Might as well just talk to myself, which I do enough anyway when I'm on a golf course, right? Cussing myself out. So it's important, and I love it. And if we all agreed, this show wouldn't be worth the hell powder it takes to blow them to hell and back. And here we are. We haven't been blown to hell. We've been maybe stepped through it, but as the song says, a country song, keep moving, man. Run right through it, and bam, won't even know your name. Pop back out, get back on it. So thanks. It's great to be here today. On the Wednesday edition of Unpaved. Sags will be along shortly. I want to start now, if we get into the sports side of it, yet we can get into the what's going on in the streets in New York and all that. Trust me, we will. But I'm not beating you down today, because I can't imagine what it's like if you live there or in some of these places where you're dealing with stuff every day, as we all do. Some of you far worse than we're dealing here in our place in Texas. So I want to get into the football side. I want to start with this Jonathan Gannon fight. I want to start right there with the Arizona Cardinals fining their head coach $100,000. First of all, they've already, in my opinion, stripped him of the dignity of leading a football team. And I've seen all of it. You get some, what he did on the sidelines was abuse. Well, that's out of hand. I've heard some say, that's all. I've seen it all, and as have you. We all have an opinion on it. And because your opinions probably or may be different than mine, doesn't mean you're right, doesn't mean I'm right. I'm telling from my eyes and experiences. When I watched that video, that Mercado didn't move a bit when Jonathan Gannon either punched him in the shoulder pads or in the arm, like, you know, pushed him and pushed him again. He didn't move an ounce. So it wasn't like, I'm telling you what, you know, when guys are hitting each other after a big play and they push the guy, or after when they're going out in the starting lineup or something and they push their guy and another guy's beating on the shoulder pads and, you know, punching him in the shoulder pads to get him loose and warmed up. Those punches are far harder than Jonathan Gannon. It's not exactly like Jonathan Gannon's Dan Quinn and he punched the guy in the face. Can we stop this? Can we please stop this soft approach to coaching and teaching? We've lost so much discipline. We don't know how to let these kids go through, and grown adults at times go through adversity. The kid screwed up. Do you realize we've turned him into the victim? Where he dropped the ball before? Not that he asked for it. He asked for criticism and why I was so selfish and the look at me stuff. And I know he apologized, but still, we all apologize for mistakes after the mistake. I'd like to hope some make excuses. He didn't, made an excuse, but the collateral damage could end up costing Jonathan Gannon his job, you know, $100,000 fine. So they're already bothered by it, the Arizona Cardinals. What if they lose four in a row? And that started the wheels before it's over. A whole staff's fired because a guy dropped the ball because it was a fixable mistake that he could have fixed himself, controllable mistake, and he left it on the ground. And now all of a sudden he's a victim of, he's abused. He's a frigging football player. He gets abused every single time he touches a football. Well, that's organized. Well, he's the coach on the sidelines. That sometimes that's not organized, and sometimes that is unpaved. And sometimes the guy needs grabbed around the shoulder pads, needs grabbed on the jersey, needs punched up against the shoulder pads with the heel of his hand. Now, I'm not talking about punching in the face. I had a guy earlier, and I understand, but he said, oh, man, grabbing it, Sean, you're going to tell me in all your years you got punched around? Listen, during pregame warm-up, you got knocked around more than that with a coach who was mad. What are you doing? Well, you know what? I'm not sure. I threw it to the other team, and I suck. Okay, listen. Now, a guy comes up and punches you in the face and chokes you out. We're talking about a whole different world here. What Jonathan Gannon did, and I got no skin in the game with the Arizona Cardinals. I don't know Jonathan Gannon from squat other than watching him coach, and he's pretty damn good at it. But so we are telling players to be emotional. How many times do you see a player getting a coach's face? And you know what I read on social media? Yeah, that's fire. That's what I need from my leader. Yeah, tell that coach, what a crappy-ass play. Yeah, when it goes the other way around, it's like, oh, abuse. And I think most people are on the side of this is not, should not be fined and not abused. But those of you that are, then you're watching a different game than we're watching. And when I see these social media tough guys at times say, oh, if he comes up and lays hands on me on the sidelines, I'm throwing hands and kicking his ass. Sure you are. You're going to sit there and you're going to say, coach, I'm sorry. And your ass is going to be at practice the next day looking at your teammates like you let them down because you were a coward and dropped the ball on the half-yard line when you could have scored and cost your team a game. Save the fake tough guy. I'll throw hands. Guy does it at the bar. Maybe you will. Dan Quinn walks up to you and puts his hands on your shoulder pad or your arm after you did something that cost your team a mental error in the competitive parts of football. After you'll get in a player's face or coach's face, he puts his hands on you. You're going to Dan Quinn and you're throwing hands on the sideline. You're like, get the hell out of here. Get the F out of here. Are you kidding me? Your ass will be right back to practice like a scalded dog the next day trying to fix it so your ass didn't cut. And now he's got to emasculate himself, take a $100 fine, and apologize publicly for having fire on the sidelines. And how many of us fans can't stand it when our coach stands on the sidelines with no emotion, doesn't get in his player's face, it doesn't mean yelling all the time, but it also doesn't mean yelling, never yelling. It happens. People cuss. People are emotional. People get in fights. People, even coaches, because their job's on the line too. Okay, so the frustration. It wasn't an all-out brawl. He didn't even move when he went in. Well, the optics. Fuck the optics. Okay, I'm so tired of optics, just like wearing masks during COVID. Screw your optics. I'm sick of them. So when I see this Jonathan Gannon stuff, I'm so pissed at Jonathan Gannon for fining and sending that loud message to other coaches. Well, we talk about certain parts of life are dying. Man, the damn coaching business and the teaching business. Kid comes up and punches you in the face in class. I'm talking about in the face. You can't do anything to him. But on the sidelines in a football game, man, guy comes up and pushes a player or does that. We see it all the time. Listen, I watched a coach on a flight home from a game go over a seat and get in a fist fight on a plane with a player. Neither one were fined. You know nothing about it. It stayed in-house, and everything was fine. The player was there. The coach was there, and neither one of them got cut. Nobody got fired, and we were back at practice the next day and after it. It's called emotions. It's not the first time. An all-out brawl in a team I played in, two guys are – three of them had started, some of the best teammates you'll ever have, and they ended up being close to the best teammates, and they went after it. I'm talking about after it in the locker room, twice when it was settled down. You didn't hear about it. You don't know about it, nor should you. It's none of your business, right? And I'll never tell the names that were in the damn thing, and neither will anybody of my other teammates. Why? Because that's what happens. You know what? Coach comes down, takes a look. He knows it gets handled. Done. The fact that could you imagine – now there is a line of abuse. Now, if this is a 7-year-old kid and you do it, of course. 7-year-old kids aren't winning Super Bowls. And even then, you go up and I don't want to grab a kid by the shoulder pads, but that's where you put your arm around and do it. Know the room. Jonathan Gannon understands the room. And the room, the friggin' room, it's a tough game. It's a physical game. It's an emotional game. You're trying to win. There's more people that bitch and complain about coaches that show no emotion than there is about the guy's emotion. It starts to lead to a place where that darkness where you're like, oh, then you say you can't stand the NFL. Of course I'm going to watch the NFL. When people say I'm not watching more, of course I'm going to turn my TV on Sunday. But it's a different watch now. And this just adds to it. The reasons we see it, the constant rule changes, that quarterbacks can't get hit. I saw a hit over the weekend where maybe it was on Jackson Dart, just a simple sack and the guy laid off. And we're calling that quarterback roughing the quarterback. Every year it gets worse. And worse and worse and worse. And it's like, we're getting to the point, where's the integrity of it? But I don't understand, what was he supposed to do, Jonathan Gannon, this? There you go. There's the Dr. J. Does he high-five a player, cost him his job? Of course he's angry. And how many of us, I know one thing, if I had a dime for every coach who either grabbed you by the shoulder pads, cussed you out, got in your face, or would otherwise be deemed inappropriate by the soft-ass side that can't stand it, that's the very reason we have problems in the country. You're not allowed to spank your kid on the rear end. Well, I am, and so was my dad. You're not allowed to scream, yell at your kid at the grocery store. You're not allowed to discipline your kid. You're not allowed to leave your kid in the car in the heat. Now that's abuse. My kid comes in and he talks poor to somebody else. He's going to apologize and make sure when he's that young, we're not doing that. And if you don't like it, oh, well. So, but we've lost that. We don't let him face adversity. We don't discipline him. And now it's permeated all the way through life, sports, everything. It's society. Now the player, if you do that in college, should just transfer. Transfer and go get paid to leave. What message is that? And so the next time it happens, and Jonathan Gannon cost your team a playoff berth, and Jonathan Gannon or does something that's heinous to his football team, should Jonathan Gannon just keep your arms folded and not react? Say it's cool. Then you'll say fire him. He has no fire or passion. See, he can't win. Jonathan Gannon, you should never have apologized publicly. You take that player aside and you guys have your come to Jesus of why you did it. I don't think you owed him an apology. He may have owed you an apology for being selfish and weak-minded and look at me. And I'm sure he's a great kid. I'm talking about that moment, not the kid. I'm talking about that moment. I'm sure that you could just and let him know the things that he did that are collateral damage to the football team. It's a job. And your subordinate happens to be Gannon. And he did nothing abusive. He did the right, save the fake tough guy. You would have fought him on the sidelines. No, you wouldn't have. None of you would have. You'd have done exactly what you do with your supporter. Take your ass back the next day and apologize to your teammates for being selfish. And Jonathan Gannon's fire, we need more of it. We need more Dan Lanning in a press conference. We need more of Dan Quinn getting after it. We need more of Dan Campbell standing up and saying in front of it. We don't need more of finesse soft guys that just allow stuff to happen on the practice field. Oh, that's okay. You want to transfer? No problem. Or you want to quit? No problem. Oh, I'm real sorry. I hope they find me, man. My bad. I should have never done that. That's too much energy for the team. That's why the organization in Arizona is constantly wondering if they're up or down or they can't find their own compass. So whatever you feel. Now, Jonathan Gannon grabs him, chokes him out, hits him in the face, goes after him, takes him. I got a problem. But to go by with emotion in the heat of the moment, and give him boom, boom, whether it was to the arm and the angle. I don't know, unless I saw the other angle from the side, which I haven't seen. Nobody even knows where the hit went. And you tell me you saw that guy fall backwards as if it was a really impactful hit. Marcellus Wiley said a great thing today on Twitter, and I'll paraphrase it. He said, I got harder hits than that with coach had his morning coffee or when he said good morning. Yeah, and he's right. Put it this way. I'm not letting somebody that sits soft on the sidelines or in the stands, not that you guys don't know football, but that doesn't understand those situations, be able to dictate $100,000 fines and sit up on your high horse when you haven't been down there. Talk to the players. Talk to the players who've been through it. You know what they're going to tell you? I deserved it, man. I got to be better. And his mind was probably on how selfish he was as opposed to Jonathan Gannon. And we've turned this into a $100,000 fine. I don't care if it's a $100 fine. It's the principle of this shit that drives me nuts. No apology needed. Take him and you in the back. You and Ricardo go back and have a coach's player meeting, just you two. You gotta clear the air, whatever the clearing the air is. You don't owe him an apology. You talk about how intense the pressure is and how it gets and what we got to do moving forward and remind him that we're going to make sure it doesn't happen again so he's not on the first bus out of town. That's what's needed, okay? You don't need validation or approval from all the fans and Arizona fans, anybody else. And the fact that you Arizona Cardinals forced your guy basically to make an apology, and I don't know if they forced him to make an apology, Jonathan Gannon, for the fact that you felt you needed to. Now what's next? How do you get to be intense with your team? Oh, just can't walk. Next time you walk by, jokingly hit a shoulder pad, bam. Oh, that's two times. Let's fire him. Enough. You just opened up a can of worms. You don't know an apology. You're coaching them hard, and they're supposed to be coached hard. And if incidents get a little emotional, shit happens in pro sports. That's the problem some don't understand. And it happened far worse than that, far more many times that you guys will never see. And it drives me nuts that he apologized. And Arizona Cardinals, you should be ashamed of yourself. you just look down at your leader, emasculate him, cut his balls off in front of his team, and made him look like a soft, like a bitch because he's got to go in there now and coach his team because he was fired up with his team. Oh, now what does the assistants do? Look over there and say, dude, what are you doing? That fired up offensive line coach who pushes his players around and gets after him and grabs him. Quit jumping off sides in a good way because he loves his guys. Hell, I'd be more concerned if the coach quit talking to me. Once he quits talking, you might as well pack your bags, take 2 weeks off, and go find a new career. It's embarrassing. And Arizona embarrassed themselves. Jonathan Gannon deserved better than the fine, and Jonathan Gannon should have known he didn't have to make a public apology. Keep that in-house. You get a little emotional on the sidelines, oh, what? I still haven't seen a coach like Andy Reid when Kelsey got in his face. I haven't seen anything about a fine or those two hate each other. Andy didn't go suing him and so call the NFL offices and get the union and stop it. Why? Because he knows there's fire and intensity on the damn field. Okay, the coaches and players pretty much get it, even on that team. And Mercado, I'm sure, is a good guy. Hopefully he'll learn from it. He's lucky he wasn't cut. Jonathan Gannon, if you get fired because of this, now how are you going to go sell somebody? Well, I'm not. I guess I won't be. What's your next interview going to look like if you get fired? Having to go in there and say, hell no, you make them pull the apology out of you if you go to another interview. If Arizona's dumb enough to let you go right away because you're not playing good and this happens. But don't let this stuff creep in. There's enough tough things about coaching football that creep in and coaching and teaching than to sit there and apologize and cut yourself off the nuts because, well, now, oh, our great leader had to apologize to a player who let a whole football team and organization down. Boy, what a novel concept. Now we've created the victimhood the other way because, well, he's the player. How dare the coach? Really? And I don't think Mercado wants us to play make him the victim. The bottom line is somehow it's been created that he is. And I think it's, quite frankly, a bloody embarrassment that's why we're so sorry. That's why people just walk over people now. People walk over as well, you're afraid to speak up. You're afraid to do something. Screw them. What are they going to do? Cancel you? We're past that now. We're past that. Do your thing. And do it within reason, with passion, and with love of the game or with love of your job. And obviously, this is a football thing we're talking about. Do it with passion and not give a shit what the rest of them think. Now, if you go overboard, then you suffer the consequences too. Period. There's a line. And this line, he wasn't even close to the line of needing an apology or being fined $100,000. It's an embarrassment. All right, let's move on. Hey, Triple E, before we throw this up, let me tell these folks about our AI-powered web browser from Perplexity. This is so friggin' awesome. And you guys know me, I'm not the greatest tech wizard on the planet, right? I'm just not. But this makes me a better tech wizard, and it makes it easier, and it's so simple, and it's so awesome. And it's helped me. I'm saying, okay, you guys see, this is kind of valuable. It takes guys like me and turns me into a web browser and tech expert. Well, maybe not, but for me, anything a step up is awesome. And it's Perplexity, and it's an AI-powered web browser from Perplexity, and it's called Common. You go to www.perplexity, just like it sounds, .ai/Common. Common can navigate around the web like a human would, clicking, typing, searching, and scrolling just like you would, getting what you need done so you can do more, obviously, and be more efficient. Now, it is just a phenomenal way to do things. Let me show you real quick here. Well, before we get to that, Triple E, let me ask you guys something about this and about how much time do you spend every day on a web browser? How much time do you spend clicking around online, searching, scrolling, typing, endless tabs? It's a lot, right? I know with me, shopping for clothing when it comes to golf clothing and how I'm building my clothing and my golf and apparel line and leisure line, I'm all over it to the point of nonsense. So this is awesome. We do it all the time. Well, there's a new AI web browser and it's Perplexity from Common. Okay, that is completely changing the way you're able to interact with the browser. Using Comet feels like a personal assistant, right? You got it right there. It lives right in your web browser. Hey, I'm personal. Hey, Sean, you want to come in here? Bam. Yeah, let's do it. Lives right in the web browser. Can actually do things for you across the internet. Yes, do things. Not just give answers. See, that's what I love. Not just going to tell me what I want to hear. They're going to do it for me. I tell them and they get to go do it. You can ask Comet to handle tasks for you and it literally clicks, types, and searches and scrolls and gets things done for you in the background while you go about your day. Comet can shop for you as well, make reservations, book travel. Let's put that up there, Triple E. Check this out. Let me show you how this works. And it's really simple. And it's really cool. Okay, you guys know my obsession with golf, right? And I'm always looking for new golf resorts. So, Triple E, let's go top 5 golf resorts in the U.S. Okay. I don't know if they're going to say, you know, if it's the Pebble Beach, Pinehurst or Black Wolf Run, meaning, you know, in that area in the Whistling Straits, somewhere. Let's say, and you could click on it, then you got America's 75 Golf Week, the top 10 best results. And you go in there and you can search through the Bandon Dunes. What a phenomenal place, right? You got Bandon Dunes. So that tells you, then it's going to go through and then you're there. So you talk to it. It doesn't talk back. Now it's going to find it for you. Whether you're going to Pebble Beach or Scotland or Bandon Dunes, as we go up and down the list, Pinehurst Resort, as I said. See, I named three of them without even getting to this, and they're bringing more. Stream Song, which has become a great and popular place. So you can find all that. You can also find, guys, there's much more of this. You want your favorite Mexican restaurant. You want to find out where to go, you know, movies. You want to find out sport. There's so many different things you can find on Comet, okay? It is awesome. And remember, where you can find it at, you go to www.perplexity.ai/comet. Whether you want to go to Ralph Lauren, buy a movie ticket, book a flight, find discounts, it's all there. And find your best resorts in the world. You see best Mexican restaurants in Texas. Bam. They're going to help us roll through this, and we're going to get that done. So you do that. It does things for you. Keep an eye. Not just answers you, but they do things for you. And you can do so many things. Find that Mexican restaurant in Austin. Let's say you're going there next Wednesday at a time that fits your calendar. Book it and send a calendar invite and email to my colleague, John, with the details. Bam! Comet gets it done. Perplexity and Comet are crushing this. So let me do this one more time. This is so cool and it's so simple. And it takes a lover of tech but doesn't know much about tech, and it makes it easy. Download Perplexity's new AI web browser, Comet, by heading to /pplx.ai. That's /P as in Paul, lx.ai/Sean, my name, S-E-A-N, and let your browser work for you. Plus, right now, when you download Comet, you get a month of Rumble Premium for free. That's 1 month of Rumble Premium for free. So it's PPLX@AI/Sean. Go now and take back your timeline. It is phenomenal. As you well know, it's perplexity.ai/comet. But use that one I sent you and plug my name in, and you'll be amazed by what it does. So there you go. Appreciate you guys and AI it's here. And Perplexity, and go see that Comet app, and you're going to friggin' love it. Get on there and check it out. Great stuff, Triple E. All right. Amazing. Zach Taylor is, and I was just about to say, we'll get back. We talked about Jonathan Gannon. Let's get to, well, it's not that big a deal, but it's just so weird how this works out. Shedeur Sanders will be the backup in Cleveland. They trade Joe Flacco yesterday. And it's already been announced by Zach Taylor, their head coach at Cincinnati, who he traded for, Joe Flacco, is going to start against Green Bay. it's phenomenal. And Joe, I think, is 40 now and keeps on doing it. And in truth, maybe he gives Cincinnati a better chance to win. If you pressure him, he's not going to move much. But I have so much respect for Joe. And now we get back to, okay, what's this mean for Cleveland? But already, that ought to tell you. Think about his, our guy JB when he comes on Monday. Segs will be on shortly. He's at the dentist. And when I talk about this regularly.
Segs is here. He's here.
Pop him in. Bring him in. Yeah. Adam Sager from the dentist. Segs, come on in. Great to have you, brother. Hope that numbness is wore off. Man. Are you talking about half your mouth?
Yeah, still a little numb, but.
Hey, yeah, surprised. We could hear you perfectly clear, brother. I unloaded on the Jonathan Gannon thing, so we could hear that. We'll give you a chance to get it right. So, Segs with this, and Flacco's going to start. And I was getting ready to say that we've talked about poor play. Now, in honesty, what does that say? And in my mind, I think it's such an indictment. Not that Flacco's starting, but that a veteran is going to have to go learn some new verbiage, is going to have a handful of days to prepare for it, is going in division and is going to play against the Green Bay Packers and start. And he didn't go through their training camps and none of this. And he's going to start. What does that say? I believe it's a major indictment on the quarterback position, because if you've had all your guys there all along, that you literally are going to bring a guy in who's going to get a couple days work, who's 40, who I respect. And against a Green Bay defense? Well, he already saw him once, which is interesting, right? Which, well, that's part of it, that he does know the preparation going in, what Green Bay is going to do defensively. Now, they'll make some changes, but that's the advantage of this, because they beat him 13-10. Their defense played well, and Joe's offense did just enough. 13 points normally isn't going to get you a win, but did. Now, 13 points ain't getting them a win against Green Bay, says Cincinnati, because Green Bay will score far more against Cincinnati. They're going to move up and down the field. But it's just a tribute to Joe and his preparedness and guys trusting him, but such an indictment on the depth of quarterback position in this league, Segs. It really is that you call in a guy in your division that you know, and you bring him, and he's going to play for you, and he hasn't seen one down at training camp in your building, and he'll have a couple days of preparation. You're going to have to scale it down, and probably because he's smart enough to pick up on it, but it just tells you, can you imagine? And it's not, and this is a bad team. So you'd think, okay, put a quarterback in there, get him some work. Well, Browning, it hasn't worked out. We thought he was a decent backup, and now here's Joe Flacco. It just is such an indictment on how we feel about the depth of the quarterback play in this league. Sans a handful of guys that are consistent at the top.
Yeah, and remember, everybody thought Browning was going to be fine coming in.
Yes, like, I was one of them, Sigs.
But just somebody, yeah.
Yes.
We sat on the show and said, yeah, I think he can come in if he's got to play, which we found out 3 months, so almost the whole season. But we thought he could have them. You know, even if you're a couple games under 500, but he went out there and was terrible. So the fact that Joe Flacco walks in and just is handed the job at 40 years old definitely says how we feel about backups in the NFL. That journeyman, you know, Joe had a great first part of his career with Baltimore. Since then, he's just kind of been a journeyman guy that goes in, he can give you some starts, he can put up some numbers every once in a while, and then you kind of move on to a younger guy, and that's what Cleveland just did with them, is they gave him some starts. They decided that Dillon Gabriel's ready to get some snaps at the starter position, and they felt, oh, we can go get an asset for Joe Flacco. Let's trade him. Bengals need a quarterback, and Jake Browning was that bad that they had to go get 40-year-old Joe Flacco to come in and start.
I would take it personal, Sex, if I was there. I honestly would. If I was in the building, I'd be like, wait a minute, I've been here competing and doing it. Now, you got to, when you compete, we say compete, but you got to produce too.
Right.
But it just goes to speak on coaches just don't trust who's behind the guy normally. They just don't. Now, if you're fortunate, you get Mac Jones. If you're fortunate with San Francisco, you had Joe Montana, you had Steve Young, and then you had Steve Bono, who was pretty good too. If you're fortunate, I like to think, you know, guys like me in Minnesota who backed up some really good starters, or when Brad Johnson had his opportunity, he took advantage of it, then became a starter. You know, guys that saw it, did it the right way. But I know my friend, I'd have taken it damn personal, man. What? After all this time, I got to either play better. What the hell? Are we really that bad? I just think it sends a loud message that we really are. Now, the thing that skews it is the great play by Baker Mayfield, who in my mind is the MVP, right, and Daniel Jones ain't far behind, or the Jared Goff great play. Josh Allen we watch every week when Lamar's healthy. We got to have Dak Prescott's playing at it. He's playing great football too. We got a lot. The top's really good. I'm not talking about that. But then we get down to that pass of 10, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not. And we think, oh, Stroud and JD Daniels and Drake, maybe we got some good guys in Bo Nix, but they got to do it longer at a higher level consistently for us to throw them into the next category.
Right.
But when you get past that and the depth, past 32, and even late at 32. Hell, even Justin Fields is with a horrible team is playing pretty damn good football right now. He just doesn't have any help to bound. They're not good enough. One guy just can't do enough. So it's just and I know how hard the position is. Trust me, I made it look hard at plenty of times. But I also know that it wasn't hard enough for some guy that waltzes into the building, he's 40, is going to play against the team, and you got two or three quarterbacks in the building, and he's walking in and going to start with 2 days preparation and still trying to learn the damn verbiage of getting out of the huddle. It's going to be one of those drawn up in the group, hey, spread right, all verts. Spread right, all hitch. Spread right, all sticks. Spread, you know, I mean, you get to the point, you're going to have to say, now, Joe's smart, but damn, dude, think about it. He's been flooded with all kinds of verbiage. I mean, now he's got to go do this. Hell, at one point, we've all been there. You'll hop in a huddle and you'll start the verbiage of another team you were on, say, damn, oh, my bad. And you're like,
right,
damn, we don't have that, Sean. That's not our protection. What do you mean? That was a protection you were at a week ago, not here. So it is, I'm curious to see how it works out. I already know what Cincinnati is. They're not very good. Green Bay's going to curb stomp them. I just hope for Joe that he's got a good supply of body bags and a suit of armor on, because they will be relentless. They know he's not going to move off his spot. And they're going to try to send a loud message, because the last time they saw Flacco a couple weeks ago, they got beat by the Browns, whether it was Joe or a good defense. But yeah, they're going to feast on this, and the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line can do zero about it, Sakes.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough go, because that Cincinnati Bengals offensive line is terrible. Luckily, he does have Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and some other weapons. But
can you line him up in the backfield? Just give it to them so you don't get hit, right. Sags. Here, yeah. Here you go, Ja'Marr. Go make plays. This is the best way I can see to get it to you, because you take two, three, you get the 3 seconds in that pocket.
Oh, it's done.
You'll be picking your head up off the turf and your ass up on a regular basis. That ball's going to up and out. Is there a way that you may have to play Wildcat just to get the ball in Chase's hands enough times, because you're not going to have time to throw it? Green Bay will be relentless with their pass rush this week.
They definitely will. You mentioned the Browns and trading Joe Flacco. I did see today that Kevin Stefanski is not ready to name his number two quarterback yet. So Shadur doesn't just walk in into that. He said he will decide later in the week who is – number
yeah,
two.
Yeah, who's the other guy on the roster? I was trying to find
it. I don't know.
Because they cut our guy, the backup who was in Baltimore, who was there. Remember, and he got picked up. I don't know if he got, you know, he'd been in Baltimore for a while and he was there. They cut him during training camp. He got a few snaps in preseason, but not much.
First depth chart I pull up does not have a second quarterback. Let's see this one. No, that only has two quarterbacks.
Because also, remember, they isn't what's his name? Kenny Pickens is a Raider, right? Traded him.
Deshaun Watson's out. As of now, I have not seen a third.
As Dr. J refers to one of my sayings, is it Joe Sixpack? Maybe Harry Hatchet asked his thought. Yeah, get a load of this, Diggs. They are so not convinced that Shadur Sanders is ready. That we're trying to find. Yeah, thank you. It was Huntley is the other one who was really good in Baltimore. Huntley played really well as a backup. Had his times when he was a good player and went through some struggles. They moved him a couple teams, and he was in Cleveland during training camp. Let him go, and I had a lot of respect for Huntley, because that's a tough job to do. As we've seen greats like Case Keenum do it off the bench for a long time, and McCowan, those guys. So Huntley is who I was talking about. But think about this, Sakes. You don't know really who the three is. You're trying to find it. And I honestly don't know right now. I couldn't tell you who the three is. And you're still not prepared there to name Shadur Sanders your backup quarterback. What is that more of? The Cincinnati Bengals? I mean, the Cleveland Browns are out of their damn mind, or they don't hold him in much high regard when it comes to being making plays this early in his career.
They have Bailey Zappe on the practice squad.
There you go. There you go. Former Patriot. Former Washington Commander. He's had some, and I'll tell you, he's an energy guy that goes places. Wasn't Zappe a Ram for a second, two segs? Was he a Ram behind Stafford? So. Was he? Maybe. I don't know, but he's been in a handful of places and brings great flair and energy. But just as a backup that's a journeyman, you end up like a kicker. You play for four, five, or six organizations, maybe catch lightning in a bottle, play well for two or three games. The one thing that you're going to hear if Zappe is the backup, segs, it's because he's had great football experience. He's had some football game experience. And then the argument's going to be, well, we're not very good. How are you going to get game experience if you don't get game experience? Well, neither one of them are getting game experience unless Dylan Gabriel gets hurt, because this ought to tell you neither one of them are close to being the starter unless he's hurt, and they're going to let Dylan Gabriel run this gamut and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, how bad has Shadur been in practice that he will not name him the number two starter when he's the only one, other one on the active roster? I know you can put three on the roster game day,
right,
with Zappe will now be that guy. But, I mean, Shadur must be doing something in that building that Stefanski is not liking. If it's on the practice field, if it's in the study room, if it's in meetings, whatever it is, there is something that Shadur is not doing.
Right. It's so weird.
Not impressed Kevin Stefanski.
No doubt. And anybody who wants to slide in the race card, don't do it. Don't do it. Deshaun and Jameis, they've had plenty. Huntley was there. Zero to do with it. Zero. And I'm going to say it again. I don't know any coach that's ever in professional football, has made a decision based on the color of the guy's skin or his religion. I never have, Sags. Never been on a roster where, this guy won out because, he's a little darker skin than Sean is. No, he was a better player. okay? And he deserved it until he didn't deserve it. Does that make sense? And so let's will come out. Stop it. They drafted him. Andrew Berry's their GM, and he's African American. So let's slow our roll. But where it comes down to, and I'm with you, and Sag's outside the building, I can't give an answer unless I got, you know, unless Joe Flacco called me and said, Sean, you're not going to believe this, which he didn't. Or right. Unless I talked to an assistant coach that I know on staff, which some, you know, when you sit around having a beer, maybe you do. But right now, they're not going to touch that. They can't. But if you get an inside source, say, Sean, listen, man, this dude falls asleep in the meetings. If I'm just saying the ifs, right? The what ifs. Right. But unless you got that guy in the building, then me and you and any of us that sit outside it, anybody on the networks, anybody that's on Twitter, you know, the social media trolls and the so-called experts that are going to tell you what's going on when it's just speculation from where we sit. Now, we can all come up with our opinion as to why. One of them says is if Zappe wasn't in the building the whole time, is not on the roster, it's a natural progression. You drafted, if you played... You played because you thought Dylan Gabriel's better. You drafted him ahead of Shedeur Sanders as a fifth rounder, a third rounder to a fifth rounder. And you thought he prepared better and you had him ready to go and you want to play him. And you did. Okay. It would say the same which should be held true for Shedeur thinking if he was doing what's right and doing taking the steps that he'd just kind of flow right into the backup until he proved he wasn't worthy of it or until he proved he was worthy of being a starter. You see my point, yep. Seg? So from a distance, I could sit here and say, but I can only deduct – and we have heard rumors from people around there and stuff on shows that have said sources close in there tell them that he's not prepared and is far from ready. He's not prepared the right way in the building. What we hear from them. I don't know that, but I can tell you this, that as a guy who was in those situations, start sometimes back up on different teams and trying to get yourself ready, that even the guys in the building know who's preparing and who's not, more than any of us do. It's not just the coaches, the players sitting in the rooms, right? They know. It's not a secret. Now, you don't sell your buddy out. You let his performance show or not, or you put your arm around him or give a Jonathan Gannon punch to the shoulder right. pad of the arm and say, get your ass studying, dude. You know, yeah, if we did that to a player, it'd be, oh, that's buddy looking after a buddy. That's leadership. Right. Jonathan Gannon does it. Oh, it's abuse. Shut up. Okay, just stop it. So I for me, can only deduct if he is not the backup this week, that leading up to this week before Flacco was traded, that the time or the effort, the lonely work, the production, the meeting room, the way he's leading, the things he's doing in the building are not up to what the Cleveland Browns want. Now, whether you like what the Cleveland Browns want or not, that's up to you, because a lot of us don't like the decisions they made. Hell, they wish Baker Mayfield was still their quarterback now. If they don't, they're stupid. So, Segs, I don't know, but that's the only thing I can deduct. Other than that, what would be the reason he'd get bypassed from 2 to 3? I don't see another one. He doesn't make a lot of money. He's a right. fifth-round pick. He made more money probably at NIL than he did doing this, at least for now, on a fifth-round right. draft pick. Thing. So I don't know what else I can deduct if they were to pass him up. Now the question is, how long are you going to – what's your leash with Dylan Gabriel as a young quarterback who had his first start in London, played pretty good, got a lot of improvement on mid-level throws he's going to have to get better at, but – he needs some help from his play caller as well. People already want him starting, meaning Shedeur, and they're not even sure if he's going to be the third quarterback right now.
Yeah, I just – when you draft a guy like Dylan Gabriel, and I know you also have Shedeur, but a third-round pick's pretty good amount of capital to give up for a quarterback.
Yeah, the quarterback third round, I was talking about the fifth round. You're right. Yeah. And it's also, Segs, it's also – a pick you expect to play and start for you eventually. He's just starting sooner than they expected.
Yeah, I'm sitting here trying to look up other quarterbacks that were drafted after Kyle McCord by the Eagles. See Riley Leonard in Indy. Just trying to see if there's another guy, because we don't hear anything about any other quarterbacks that were drafted around that time. And we don't hear, why aren't they getting reps? Why aren't they – like, this is only being talked about because it's Shedeur Sanders. That's it, because he's Deion's son, and they made a lot of noise over the last couple of years just running their mouths, saying whatever they had to say to get him to the point where big-time draft experts thought this kid was the number one pick in the draft. And, I mean, I'm not a draft expert. I don't know the position that well. I've sat and watched it with you, learned from just listening to other guys talk. I never thought he was a first-round pick. I always thought he was that second to third round guy that maybe you sneak in a draft pick here because you have an extra one or something and you can get him on the roster. But then when it became such a spectacle of what he was, of what he was going to be in the NFL, if I were a GM, I would have stayed away from him because this is what you get every single week for not only just the first 5 weeks of the season, the preseason. I mean, ESPN was leading off with his highlights from preseason games for a fifth round pick. So the fact that, and they wouldn't show Dylan Gabriel and what he was doing, it was all just Shuter and Sanders. So this is why when guys, Arch Manning, what do you think is going to be like when Arch Manning makes it to the NFL? If he does, if he gets better in college and stays another year and gets better and plays well at Texas and then is drafted wherever he's drafted, it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah, let me bring up a point about this. Yeah, and I'm so glad you hit a really good point, made a hell of a point on why don't we see this in other places. And I'm thinking back to when he's in Colorado. I saw him play some good games, and I saw him play some not so good games. The thing I loved when he came out of school, Segs, that he proved to me, he'll stand in the pocket and take a hit. He did a lot of that because he got the hell knocked out of him.
Right.
I gained a lot of respect for. Now I've seen guys who can throw it better. I've seen guys that are more athletic. I mean, he was a good player at Colorado. He wasn't a great player at Colorado. He's a good player. And I know we could say, well, what if he'd have played at Georgia? Well, he chose to go to Colorado. He didn't play at Georgia. Yeah. So that's, he wanted to be coached by his dad. And at every level, he's been with his dad at every place he's been, high school, college, and at HBCU and at Colorado. He's been with his dad, and that's okay. You want to be it? Who doesn't want to coach their kid and be around their pops? I hope they all do, but rarely does a guy get that chance because the dad's so good at everything he's done, and he has the job, and along the way, he's able to kind of dictate where you go. Mm-hmm. But, Segs, I never saw anything. Toughness that said, this is the first pick of the draft. There was no way. There was absolutely no way. I thought, okay, maybe by, you go through it and somebody late in the first round, if you're saying it's Shuter Sanders, you love the DNA, you think he's going to be great, but you see 4 or 5 years down the road him doing it. He wasn't ready to play in the NFL. He's not ready to play in the NFL. Most rookies aren't. Peyton Manning wasn't. And yet look at how it turned out for him. He wasn't, and he showed that as a rookie. We think we are, but we're not. We don't even realize what we don't know until year 2, 3, and 4. So while I respected what he did, and he made some spectacular comebacks, I mean, damn, the guy played good at Colorado. But he didn't play great. He was not a first pick of the draft guy. He just wasn't. Now, simply, I think this comes from Segs, the name, obviously, because the expectation. I get what having the last name of Sanders. Mm-hmm. But also, Segs, we've created this thing that if a draft expert says he should have been a first-round pick, and while people say, oh, all the draft experts. No, all the draft experts didn't. Some right. did. Now, some may have had him in the third round and not the fifth round or the second round, but you weren't overloaded. Go and interview every GM and say, would you have drafted in the first round? Apparently, none wanted him until the fifth round. Now, whether they didn't want the pub or the headache that went with it, well, that's been created by them, nobody, and social right. media. That's nothing that team can control, and the only way they control is by not drafting him, if that was the reason they didn't draft him. So I think he can be a good player. He's nowhere near ready, and that's, you're right. So if the fifth round pick in New England, and Drake May was pissing down his leg and sucked, right, let's just say it, which he doesn't, and you said, okay, I'm just saying if there's a fifth rounder, and you're like, well, wait a minute. Or, hell, in New Orleans, perfect case in point, even though he's a higher pick, you know, Shook waiting and waiting, they can't win, and finally they win, and Spencer's played pretty damn good football, yeah. yet they're not winning. So if you made the decision, well, I want to see how Shook looks, right? But nobody's pining for him. And right. they, and it went 10 straight games had from last year to this year, and Spencer had not won a game. They had not won. They finally won one last week, and it was really good to watch. But nobody's pining for that. So that only goes back to this, Segs. It's because all the hype that was brought through the last name and the fact that draft experts, some of them that you read, go ask Joe Montana. I don't know how Joe even thinks about it. I don't know. Did Brady have him as a first-round pick? That was Tom maybe shocked him at fifth? But if he did, why didn't he draft him?
Right.
You know, in the third round. And exactly. then you wouldn't have to trade, and you wouldn't have to trade for Kenny Pickett. So if these are true, like I said, I want to give him every benefit of the doubt. But the truth is we should be talking about Dylan Gabriel. He's a starter. And if Shuter Sanders had Dylan Gabriel's game last week and he played exactly the same way, what would everybody be saying?
It was a great game.
He's got to start him. That's with the future. Boys,
he has to be going.
Yeah, yep. He made some mistakes. But, man, for yep. a first NFL start on the road against a good Minnesota Vikings defense and a blitzing when I say nut job, I mean, if actually Brian will blitz mm-hmm. you from the stands – and he held in there, took some hits, delivered the ball, had him in position to win. If that was the case, the social media world would have said, why didn't you do this game one? That's exactly what they would have said.
Right.
And the truth is, Dylan Gabriel with that performance probably should have started at the beginning, but that just goes to show you they still weren't comfortable, the mental, the physical not ready, whatever it was in the building. And Joe's been respected and good for a long time in this game and has been a true pro. So that's the only thing I can deduct from this, Segs. Honestly, it really is.
Yeah, it's it'll be something to continue to watch this season. You know, you hope Dylan Gabriel plays well, and that's not to keep Shedeur Sanders off the field. It's because you want to see good quarterback play in this league and see the position continue to get better with these younger guys. And you hope it's Dylan Gabriel. If it's not, then you hope it's Shedeur Sanders. But you have to give the kid a realistic shot. It can't just be one game and, nope, this isn't enough. We need Shedeur immediately. Like, no, give this kid some time to figure out if he is a starting quarterback in the NFL. Sean, I thought we should do let's do a little top five in the NFL, top five teams. I know we didn't talk about it because I just wrote mine down in the last 10 minutes, but let's start at number five. There's so many teams that are good. I think our list could be definitely different when we come to this. So I'll start with number five. I have the Indianapolis Colts. I love how they're playing. They're running the ball. Daniel Jones is taking care of the ball. They're using his legs and his arm to beat you. And the defense, I think, is even more underrated than Daniel Jones was coming into the year. That defense flies around. I have the Colts at number five, and I think they're dangerous moving forward in that AFC South.
And we're doing this a whole overall NFL. At
yes,
five.
Whole NFL.
Is there any part of you, Segs, that thought maybe I put them higher?
It was close, but my four top teams I had as the top four in my head from the jump. I just hadn't ordered them yet, but now I have them ordered. I had the Colts. I thought with the way the Colts have played so far, they had to be top five. So that's why I put them at five. I just think the other four teams are better this year so far.
Okay. I labored over putting the Colts higher. I'm battling, and I don't know, Segs, how I'm doing this, and I probably should just because of injuries. I don't know how the 49ers are 4-1. Did you consider them in your top five?
I have them written down as just missed. They're now I have like five teams that just missed, so I have a top 10 written down, but they are not in my top five.
Yeah, I came down to like them and the Colts is my fifth team. And I guess when I tread lightly with the Colts, Segs, I know we've seen five games. If we ask this question in week eight and it's still going like this, I guess there's part of me that still is like, do I really believe that they're this good? The answer is yes. And in truth, with respect to them, the way they played, an MVP candidate at two positions on offense, a defense that's doing a great job. They're well coached and they're protecting the quarterback and giving him, and they're doing a great job of attacking. And their receiving corps, Segs, is pretty damn good and tough. I labored over having them on the six looking out. I can't. And I know Houston fans and the rest of it, I like it. I had them at top five too. And the only reason I'm going to put them at five over the 49ers is because I still got to see the 49ers fully healthy. And I don't know. I'm not sure I trust either one of them 10 games in to be 9-1 or 8-2, but I'm going to give it because I think right now the Colts overall are playing better football, even though the 49ers did beat the Rams. Give me the Colts at five as well.
Okay. For me, number four, the 2 through 4, I think you can put in any order and you're okay with it. But I'm putting the Tampa Bay Bucks at number four. I think that Baker is playing at such a high level. Going back to our poll question from yesterday, who's your MVP? He was the MVP in our poll, going away with like 60% of the vote. He's played awesome. They do have some injuries. The defense, I think, is good, but they do have a propensity to give up points. So I think that defense can get better as they go on throughout the year, assuming, you know, no big injuries. but I just have them just below my top three teams, especially two and three. So I have the Bucks sitting at number four.
All right. What if I told you I got Philadelphia sitting at four?
I was just very close to putting them there.
Yeah. Now, probably I don't think it's disrespectful. Sags, I'm just treading a little lightly because the explosiveness on offense is not there yet. Does that make sense? I know the potential's there. And I just know they know how to win. But I think they're going to win the division. I do. And they're the – as a 4-1 team, I could easily say put them at one. You guys can argue all you want. They're 4-1. They're the reigning Super Bowl champions. But I'm just going by this year's picture, not last year's experience. And I don't feel like – I don't know if the stats bear it out. I don't feel like they're getting to the quarterback as much either, Segs. I don't know where they were at sacks 5-6 games in last year.
Right.
They're front. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I'm off, but I don't feel the pressure's the same. I got them at four with every reason to believe that I could be having the conversation. They could be the best team in 3 weeks. I believe that because I trust Hurts to win, but I don't know when they face teams like them that can score a lot, how many days they can score a lot with them in a passing fancy. And I'm a Hurts guy. I'm going to say, Give me the Philadelphia Eagles at four.
Okay. And now I don't know where they were at last year, but this year, I just looked it up, they do sit at just 7 sacks, which is bottom towards the bottom of the NFL. Only
so you see the production, yards per carry down on the running game. Not as the passing game doesn't feel explosive yet, which is capable. Remember, another coordinator. Another new offensive coordinator, Jalen Hurts, settle in. We haven't seen him have to have gaudy numbers just yet. And the sacks, like 7 of them for that team's not enough. So I'm gonna put the Eagles at four. I'll give you three since I'm here. Put Tampa at three. In the truth, if both of them played at their home place, I would give the Eagles probably the advantage both places if they played. Yet the way they've played right now, I like Tampa better. Does that make sense?
Yes,
I do. There's more star power on Philly, no doubt. I just like the toughness of the way that Philadelphia, they run the football. There's a toughness about Baker Mayfield that I know the rest of the organization has to feel. And I think he's playing like an MVP. I think his leadership is top three in this league. I think he's learned from past immature mistakes to turn into a gamer and a player. He can throw it. He can run it. He'll get a little careless at times. But, man, does he come back, take blame, and get after it again. There's an energy about him that if it was on a neutral site, say, I believe he can – he's just got enough balls and leadership and moxie and good play. I actually think he can go in and beat some teams that maybe others don't. I would have never told you, especially in that division, I would have never said, nah, I don't see how they're going to be in the top five and we're having this conversation 6 weeks from now. And you see that guy right there, Ibuka. You think he's any good? Yeah, he's just a new level. And he is exactly the example when he opens his mouth, how we want everybody, how you want a teammate to be. Love him. And Baker does too. Give me Tampa three, because I don't know how long they're going to be there. They may not be there for the rest of the season. But I feel different about the Buccaneers, and a lot of it has to do with a phenomenal performance by a quarterback, and he's doing it again this year.
Yeah, I have the Eagles at three. And a lot of what you said, I think that the stats have them keeping me down at three instead of at one or two, where, you know, normally the reigning Super Bowl champs, 4-1 to start the season, would be at one or two. But yeah, it is concerning to see the offense just kind of stumble along as they go. And I know they've still won games and they beat really good teams. They went through the Chiefs, the Rams, and the Bucks, beating all three. And yeah, you could argue maybe they shouldn't have beat the Rams and so, but they did. So I think that whatever will they have to win games in big time moments and make the big time play at that time, I think I have to put the Eagles just slightly ahead of the Bucks.
Like fair.
I
said,
2, 3, 4, I could put in any order and be fine, right? With it. Yeah. Yes. But,
and a couple teams that are not in their sigs for me, because we know the Chargers the last couple weeks have concerned me a little bit. So I would have had them in the top five 2 weeks ago. Right. And who else? I think the Commanders, when Jaden's back in there, can make a run in the East and give them a hard time. I like the team, but they're banged up at a lot of positions. Wide receiver, got McLaurin back. They got to get some people back. And there was another one for me.
To me,
the Rams. The Rams are the best. I'll put it this way. Even though they're 3-2, the Rams are the best team not in my top five.
Yes.
I think even though the 49ers beat them, I'd take the Rams. I think the Rams are better than all those teams we just talked about, meaning outside the top five. And I can tell you this, for my money in a head-to-head game, I'm not sure I wouldn't pick the Rams in a big moment to beat all of them. I'm talking about my top five. I got them in a holding pattern because, I do. But I can tell you this, I don't believe they're outside the top five. I still should be putting them in the top five. But how do I put them in? Didn't the Colts just beat them? You know what I'm saying, Sags? You want to slide them in? Didn't they beat them? I want to, but I'm just telling you, if they meet again along the way, any of these teams, that team right there is outside the top five and is good enough to be in the top five and is good enough to beat them all and could be number one. But I just couldn't put them in at 3-2 and losses to two of these teams that are in our mix, at least our conversation, right?
Yeah, I think some other teams that I just wrote down that just missed, and I have five or six of them, the Steelers.
They're sneaky, and they're hanging around, and yes. Jacksonville as well.
And Jacksonville was the other team. So and Green Bay. Green Bay, as much as I hate Green Bay being a Bears fan, that defense looks really, really good. Jordan Love looks good. We'll see how the weapons continue to develop, especially at the wide receiver position where they've kind of struggled. But the tight end's really good. Josh Jacobs really good. And then you have Micah Parsons, Rashawn Gary, and et cetera on defense.
Segs, you know what's crazy about this? We actually could take our second five, our others, and stick them against the first five and feel pretty good about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You really could, because, hell, the Steelers may run away with the division.
Yeah.
Honestly, they may run and hide the division. The Jacksonville Jaguars every week continue to impress me. We've went through 12 teams, and the Kansas City Chiefs aren't even mentioned.
Right.
And I know they hover and they're there because they're Andy Reid and they're Patrick Mahomes, but I just feel different about them. I think they're going to have to labor to even get in the playoffs at times. I do. And
yeah.
I don't know what that, but the help from the Chargers, the Raiders teams are not playing well. The Seattle lost last week. It wouldn't shock me either if Kansas City went on a 6-game winning streak, because that's who the Chiefs are. But
yeah.
I can't put them ahead of 7 or 8 teams I have in front of them.
Right. Number two for me, I have the Detroit Lions. I think that offense is really damn explosive still. That defense, as long as Aiden Hutchinson is healthy, that defense is dynamic because he is that good of a player. I know we talk about Micah Parsons. I know we talk about Myles Garrett and some others, but Aiden Hutchinson is right there with those guys.
He's in the conversation. He's in the team picture.
Yes. As a difference maker coming from the edge spot. And he just makes so many plays, and it's not just rushing the passer. We've seen him drop back and intercept the ball. We've seen the batted balls that he can get to because of his length. It's just the Lions are a scary team. And if the coordinators don't really make a difference, this team is scary moving forward. But how do they react when the playoffs come? That's the thing. But so far, we're just doing through 5 games. They're really good.
And how they'll react outside their building in a different environment if they have to play outside their building. Right. You know what I mean, Segs?
Yep.
And they'll be outdoors anyway. And I'm not sure that'll be a problem because the Super Bowl is in San Francisco this year. So
right.
We'll see. I had a hard time with this too. I labored over them and the Buffalo Bills. So I'm assuming you're putting it one.
Yes.
And that's mine. And I got right down to it. I think that the Detroit Lions have as many weapons as there is in the league. I just think the one weapon in Buffalo is so good that that here's the difference. We know their defense will fly around. And it's unique, Segs, because they're coached by a defensive guy in McDermott, who a lot of times you lean towards defensive offense, right? But he gets out of the way, and Joe Brady has them doing their thing, and Josh Allen. And isn't it amazing? I think we've seen it. Everybody talks about Belichick and Brady. We've seen it. Every coordinator that rolls through with Josh Allen is either getting a job or held in the highest regard. So while coordinators are important, that dude's got a blue and red suit, dresses in a phone booth, and has an S on his chest. And I know New England beat him, but what's the worst loss? Detroit's first one where they got curb stomped, or a pretty good and improved and possible playoff team if it continues. Yeah. You never know. because the other two teams in the AFC East are awful, and the Jets and the Miami Dolphins and Drake May, and they're being led and they're playing physical the way Mike wants them. They're tough, and his quarterback's tough. So I had a hard time, Segs, with the two, because I actually think we could see this as a Super Bowl, Detroit and Buffalo. Right now, give me Buffalo slightly ahead of Detroit, but when both of them are playing downhill, man, Detroit's pretty friggin' good. The question is, can they overcome the course of the season? The coordinators, do they keep growing as well with this team? And we see a same, like a 14-win team again. I don't know if we're getting to that, but those are the two. I went back and forth, but I had Buffalo first, Detroit second as well.
Yeah, I had Buffalo one just because you have the best player in football. You're 4-1. Yeah, you're coming off a loss, but they correct things quickly. And McDermott has them playing good defense, and Josh Allen is Josh Allen.
He's special.
Simple as that.
He's the freakiest skill set as we have. I don't know who they play this week, Sags, but I can tell you this. I haven't looked at Buffalo's schedule this week. I usually do that post-Wednesday. I can tell you this. If they're not bye, and if they're not a bye week, that didn't sound right. If they're not bye, yeah. Hey, if you're not
they
bye,
might be bye.
You know, yeah, if they don't have it, never, I mean, maybe they are.
Oh, but we have another doubleheader Monday night football. Bullshit.
Right. Everybody's favorite.
Yeah, Buffalo is Monday at night. Atlanta. Yes, Monday night. That's the early game, and then Chicago at Washington.
I got a little message for Atlanta, just so you after a Buffalo loss, even though they're coming to your building, I would hope that you have your best football ready this week, because you're going to get a team that's going to look a little different than you saw against the New England Patriots
at home. At least the Atlanta fans will be happy that the Chick-fil-A in the stadium will be open, because it's not Sunday. So
that's
maybe
right.
That'll give them some closure.
I mean, it's just love it, but I don't really want Buffalo coming to my building after they got beat in theirs. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. Yeah.
And as we quick wrap up here, Mariners beat the Tigers yesterday 8-4. Yankees stave off elimination, win 9-6. Judge with a monster home run to tie the game in the fourth.
Yeah, right out the foul pole. Huge stakes. That was big, man.
Jazz Chisholm steps up later and gets the lead. Want to see how today goes. I still feel like the Blue Jays are heavy, heavy favorites in this. It'll be hard for the Yankees to win three in a row, but I think we get all four today. Yes, we have all four of them.
Yep,
today.
Sure do.
So Cubs are throwing Jameson Taillon to try and avoid being swept by the Brewers, with Priester going for the Brewers. We got Schlittler going for the Yankees against Varland, who's been
– and they're hoping they get a Red Sox Schlittler performance.
Yes.
No doubt.
They need that. And they then sure the do. Night game, the Phillies travel out to L.A. down 2-0. Aaron Nola versus Yamamoto. That's going to be the one to watch. This Phillies offense, since I can't remember exactly which game it was in the playoffs, but since a playoff game in 2023, almost all their hitters are under 200. Harper, Trey Turner, Schwarber, they're all way down and not hitting the ball at all, basically. So
who's going for the Dodgers next?
Yamamoto.
Okay. Well, that won't be easy.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
We could see two NL sweeps setting up a Dodgers Brewers NLCS. We could have that as early as tomorrow that we know who's in that.
Clutch. I love that we have all four on a Wednesday. I love it when there's no football. It's awesome. You get tuned in Wednesday. And I'm jacked up for all of them. 208 Eastern is the first.
Yes, 208
Eastern. Hey, 308 Eastern. 208.
208. Right, Eastern. Yeah, Cubs, Brewers are 4. Blue Jays, Yankees at 6.
Right. What a great Judge coming through. The you'll hear Frenchie on the broadcast and Brian Anderson. And you'll hear AJ when they're broadcasting. The stars have to play well. Managers will admit it. Your stars do. And that was big, because it turned that one around and they got a little in-game momentum and were able to pull that one off. I still like the Toronto Blue Jays and that. Things. I'm curious, who in your mind of these 8 teams left has played the best this postseason? Pick me one of the National, one of the American, and I will too before we go. Do you have – and it's not that you think they're going to win it. To date, who do you think – has played the best in the American and National League getting to this point? Who's played? And I know some have played one extra series because they were in the
yeah.
But just of all the teams, who looks the best to you, even though it may not be your prediction to win? You may think you may think Detroit looks better than Toronto, but you think Toronto's right. going to go on and win. Who do you think to date right now looks the best between you overall as a baseball team?
I think Toronto's offense has looked the best, just coming in and being ready to go. And yes, they had lost yesterday, but they still scored 6 runs. But to me, if I'm just picking one team from the whole playoffs, the Dodgers. The Dodgers just look locked in. You know, they didn't come in and win 99 games, 103 games like we all thought. They didn't win the 110 that some projected. But now they found Roky Sasaki for the back of the bullpen. He's been great since he's been put in that closer role. The offense is showing up, and it's all of them. It's Betts. It's Shohei. It's, you know, you keep going down the list. Freddie Freeman. They've all been good at different times, if not all good at the same time. And to me, the Dodgers, just you have to be one of these teams to just be like, yeah, the Dodgers are still the Dodgers. And it's a worry when we have to face them.
Yeah, I think the Dodgers are hell, and I think the Brewers can go win it. I see them consistently this, but it hasn't been like jump out in your face like the Dodgers right. has, or in the American League, like all the runs Toronto has scored, right? It just hasn't jumped out yet. They keep winning. Great manager. The players respond. And I'm thinking back Robin Yount and Paul Molitor and Stormin Gorman Thomas, Cecil Cooper and Jimmy Gantner and Ben Ogilvy. And I'm going through old school. Bob Bucher, I'm going through old school. And it's got to be really cool that Milwaukee fans, while you may not be comparing them to the names, you are comparing them to a team that is a legitimate World Series threat. Right. I love the grind of that team and how free-spirited they are and how they play, but they're tough. Yet the Dodgers have looked the most impressive overall in the National League they have. In the American League, listen, I kind of put Seattle where I put Milwaukee, where Seattle, I think they can go win the whole thing. If it's Seattle and Milwaukee, you should not be shocked with right. the pitching. You shouldn't be. But just that it's not overall flair. They'll grind it out. You know, you'll hang around, and they're facing, hell, shit, Detroit could pitch.
I mean, yes.
They'll get after you, and they get some clutch hitting, and
right.
they know how to get after you. So I get it. And then you take individuals from each matchup, and you get, hell, Scooble, and we saw Schlittler against the Red Sox. I mean, there's been some phenomenal performances and guys coming out of the bullpen. So the sneaky ones for me, when I say they shouldn't be sneaky, the Milwaukee-Seattle, I can see it. But right now, if you were just saying I'm a bet man, you'd say Toronto versus the Dodgers in the World Series is the best matchup, or they're playing the best so far. Segs, right. I heard a stat yesterday real quick before we go that I had no idea about. And I know he's a platinum gold glove guy, and he's hit 60 home runs. Yeah, you know, I heard Pierzynski. I think it's AJ on that broadcast. Yeah, it is. He and Wainwright, right? They're calling it on that broadcast. Do you know that Cal Raleigh? You know, Gilbert was pitching. He was going. It was like inning 5, I think. Dude, he snapped like 6 balls in the dirt on sliders or curve. I mean, right. I'm like, dude. Right? And he got out of the inning. I'm like, are you? When's that ball? I mean, it's beating Cal Raleigh up, but the ball's not getting by him, right? And I'm thinking, damn, how many of those curves are you going to snap off at 57 feet instead of 60 feet, 6 right. inches, right? And Raleigh's, and then Pierzynski says, oh, that's a platinum glove winner right there. Guy's phenomenal, blah, blah, blah. There's, of course, AJ loving catchers, mm-hmm. as he should. He said that Cal Raleigh has not had one passed ball the whole year.
Yeah.
Now, come on, dude. It's incredible. Come on. Well, 60 home runs is ridiculous for anybody, let alone a catcher. Right. I'm sitting here fixated on no passed balls, and he had to catch, what, a buck 50 or a buck 45, whatever, however many he caught this year, and then DH the other time or whatever. Are you kidding me? Dude, just a simple snap. You know, a guy throws one and yanks it into the ground, right? And it just bounces off and gets by him in a pass ball. Somebody's on first, goes to second one time.
Right.
That statistic to me is alarmingly good. The guy's been the best all-around player in baseball all year long.
Yes.
Forget the 240 average. Everybody's told me, as we've said, average doesn't matter. That's what I'm led to believe by those guys who do all the analytics and metrics in this shit. And, well, I still think it does because it puts you on base more. That right. being said, right. you got a guy who hits 60 and plays platinum glove defense and doesn't allow a pass ball all year. And he's catching them all.
Yeah,
and he's tough as 100-year-old leather. It's just that's a statistic that I knew he's, hell, I know he's had a great defensive year. We've talked about it. But when AJ said that, I almost want to say, AJ, you're lying. Why are you saying
right,
that?
Right, right.
But he was telling the damn truth. After he watched Gilbert bang a bunch and yank a handful into the ground, and Cal Raleigh just getting beat up on his forearms by it and knocking them all down. Guy's phenomenal.
Yeah, and that's why his defense is the main reason why a lot of people have him as the MVP, over Aaron Judge.
Fair enough. No argument, brother. You can't argue if he does.
Really, really good. Judge a little higher offensively. But the defense, the platinum glove defense, like you just mentioned, it has a lot of people putting Cal Raleigh over the top.
Judge is a really good defensive player. He is. He's consistently good and played center and right mostly. You know, he's done both. But I can tell you this. Cal Raleigh's better at his position defensively than Aaron Judge is at his position defensively. Because I can make the argument that there is no defensive catcher all around better than Cal Raleigh in baseball this year. Let alone he's been good since he's been doing it. And then you add 60 home runs on a team that had to chase down the Astros. Yeah, no argument if Judge wins it. Much respect, and sure as hell no argument. And when a catcher does this, knowing the grind on his body, that if he was a basketball player, they'd load management his ass 40 games this year.
Yes.
And he still shows up. That's your example of how it's supposed to be played. I have no problem with Raleigh being that guy. It's been fun to watch, man. He's a special defensive player.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. They'll do it for us today. Tomorrow, we will jump into starting to preview our college football weekend. We got a big one. Ohio State goes to Champaign to take on Illinois, an underrated Illinois team who got their ass kicked by Indiana a few weeks back, then come back and beat your Trojans. So they're, you know, coming off a win and looking at this huge, huge matchup against the Buckeyes and thinking they can come out and win. And that line's pretty big. We'll get to that tomorrow. And then Alabama travels to Mizzou to take on a Missouri team that has a top four ranked offense and a top four ranked defense in the country. So that'll be a really good one as Alabama starts to hit their stride after a slow start with Kalen DeBoer this season, hitting their stride and going. Now it's time to see, can they handle the gauntlet of the SEC? Same thing can be said for Missouri as well. We'll talk about that. And I do want to hit on the Travis Hunter thing. The amount of snaps.
The reason I didn't open with that, I wanted to save that for you when you didn't come back from the dentist, because I think that's a really how we teased it yesterday. It's a pretty interesting conversation of why should he and why isn't he? Would it make him better? And the talk about in the past that he didn't, I heard people say he didn't get any work at Colorado wide receiver. Well, we'll cover all that. I think that's an important, a very, very important topic. And so I look forward to it. And real quick on Kalen DeBoer, Segs, if he's able to go out there and his quarterback's really friggin' good, man, that kid's going to be a really good player. If they're able to go out there and do this and keep winning, I'm just asking as a question for Tees Mar, are you going to have the same energy for him in winning that we did in losing? If he's able to go out and get his team to playoff and make head wave in it, I didn't say Nick Saban good. It's unfair to him to compare him to Nick Saban. He ain't Nick Saban. But will we have the same energy if he goes and wins some big games as we did when he lost some games he shouldn't have lost? Something to keep an eye on, because he's handled it with some class. Now they want him to go handle it with some wins. And he's got a couple in a row that's important against two good teams, Georgia and Vanderbilt.
And plus, we will wrap up. Maybe we could wrap up all four series when we look at Major League Baseball playoffs, and we could have our AL and NLCSs complete and ready to go. Starting, I think it's Sunday. I saw the schedule. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but those would be starting soon. So thank you to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to you, Sean. We will be back tomorrow at noon Central, kicking it off. Thanks, guys. See you.